Good morning. This is Mary, and I'll be reading selections from the Decatur Herald and Review for Monday, March 24th, 2025. From the front page, New Salem may be history. Lincoln's site crumbling. Will efforts to save it be enough? By Addison Wright. Petersburg. In 1831, Abraham Lincoln arrived at the New Salem grist mill along the Sangamon River, aboard a flatboat that was sinking. Lincoln had been hired by a man named Denton Offutt to deliver the boat cargo to New Orleans. As the story goes, Offutt was so impressed by Lincoln's quick thinking to rescue the boat and save the cargo that he offered him a job at a shop he planned to open in New Salem. Lincoln returned from the cargo trip and decided to stay in New Salem, about 20 miles northwest of Springfield. By the time Lincoln left the town in 1837, he was a state legislator and his political career was taking off. While New Salem was essentially abandoned in the years after Lincoln departed for Springfield and then Washington, D.C., it was reconstructed during the 1930s as an historic site that last year attracted almost 400,000 visitors. But time has taken a toll on the state's effort to memorialize Lincoln in the town where he developed his political chops. Lincoln's New Salem State Historical Site has fallen into disrepair as the tab for deferred maintenance on properties managed by the Illinois Department of Natural Resources has grown to an estimated $1 billion statewide, according to IDNR spokesperson Jayette Bolinsky. In recent years, the roofs of the two structures have caved in. The grist mill, where townspeople would grind wood into flour, is closed, with boards across the entryway. There are holes in the wooden entrance ramp, and the mill's drive shaft, which powered the structure, has been inoperable since a 2016 flood. Gina Gilmore Walter, president of the New Salem Lincoln League, said it's unsafe for school children to walk along the road or over the closed pedestrian bridge to reach the mill. When responsibility for the site, along with all other state historic sites, was shifted to IDNR from the Illinois Historic Preservation Agency, in 2017, New Salem stopped getting $200,000 annually from the state capital fund. At the same time, IDNR was suffering from almost two decades of disinvestment, Bolinsky said. However, efforts are underway to restore New Salem. IDNR announced this week that the site would receive about $8 million in funding for improvements from the Rebuild Illinois Capital Plan for improvements. The site has received a total of about $3 million in capital funding since Governor Pritzker took office in 2019. In addition, Republican State Senator Steve McClure, who represents the area, is leading a bipartisan legislative effort to rehabilitate the site in coordination with the New Salem Lincoln League. Legislation made up of three separate bills would create a New Salem Preservation Commission under IDNR to assess the site and provide a budget to fix the structures. The measure would also create a procurement exception because of the difficulty to find tradespeople with construction skills similar to those used in the 1830s that are needed to properly rebuild the structures. According to Republican Representative Wayne Rosenthal, the legislation's House sponsor, IDNR estimates it will cost $19 million to rehabilitate the site, far higher than the $5 million specified in the legislation. An amendment will be added to update this cost, according to McClure, along with other amendments to require IDNR to conduct an immediate assessment of the site and report back to the General Assembly within 30 days. The department does not support the creation of a preservation commission, as laid out in the legislation, saying in a statement that doing so would create an unnecessary layer of bureaucracy and red tape. However, it has offered to enter into a friends arrangement with the Lincoln League, which would help meet our shared goals without creating undue additional bureaucracy, the statement said. McClure said he thinks the IDNR is concerned if the New Salem site is fully funded, IDNR would have to provide similar help to every other site it oversees. Well, in my view, New Salem is the most important state historic site, McClure said. This site, where Lincoln's whole political career began, has sort of been just falling into the abyss, and we've got to protect it. McClure said the grist mill, where Lincoln first arrived, is the project's top priority. The shape it's in is pretty urgent, McClure said, during a recent tour of the site, pointing to a splintered piece of loose wood. I mean, look at this. It's a safety hazard. If that's what we're doing to maybe one of the most important structures in the village, why have the site open? He asked. The mill is largely inaccessible. The pedestrian bridge that connects the structure, located down the hill from the town and over a highway, is closed. New stairs were added about a year ago, but they stop halfway down the hill. Gilmore Walter said the area isn't safe for school field trips. You're going to have to make some kind of parking that's got a guardrail that's safe for kids on school trips to access this, because they tore out the stairs that came to this. And you can see the new stairs, but they block them off, she said. There's like the stairs that go nowhere. The roofs on two structures, the Trent Barn, which was owned by the ferry operator Alexander Trent, and the carding mill, where townspeople would card or comb wool from their sheep, have also collapsed. The carding mill is the only animal-powered carding mill in the United States, according to Gilmore Walter. When she visited the site as a kid in the 70s and 80s, there were oxen powering the mill. In Lincoln's time, people in the town would shear their sheep, wash the fleece, and card the wool using the mill. Then it would be straightened and spun into thread and yarn. This is the beginning of the Industrial Revolution, when we started taking that process out of the home, where people would sit for a week to card the same amount of wool that you could take there and have it done in a few hours, Gilmore Walter said. The roofs were damaged from exposure to moisture, which led to deterioration and rot. Now that the roofs are gone, that will speed the same process for the rest of the structure, Rosenthal said. When you lose the roof and then the other logs stay wet all the time, they're going to deteriorate, Rosenthal said. This is going to continue on this building, and you're going to see it continue on all the structures here, unless they're properly repaired and taken care of. Right now, they're not. The site has 7 employees, and Rosenthal said a larger staff is needed to help manage and maintain the park, which also contains a campground and trails. Gilmore Walter said she remembers when the site was bustling with period reenactments. You would come through here, and there would be people dipping candles, making soap, cooking over the open fires. The blacksmith would be hammering in the shop, Gilmore Walter said. McClure said the site's introductory video has not been working for the past few months, despite investments in new equipment by the New Salem Lincoln League. That's pathetic, McClure said of the video not working. This is where Abraham Lincoln, one of the most famous people to ever live, started his career in politics, and you can't even watch an introductory video. The Lincoln League and the Abraham Lincoln Association led an effort in 2019 to request state funding for repairs, but they didn't file any legislation. And the COVID-19 pandemic ended the effort, according to Gilmore Walter. McClure expects continued bipartisan support for his legislation, which has backing from at least two Chicago Democrats, Senator Bill Cunningham and Senator Robert Peters. In addition to its historical importance, the site provides a boost to the small town of Petersburg, just to the north, said David Blanchett, a local journalist who has been involved in area museums, including the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library and Museum in Springfield. Blanchett says the site is very peaceful. There are tree-lined pathways that you can walk down, Blanchett says. There's a lot of economic impact, too, when tourists come to the community and spend money at restaurants and gas stations and convenience stores and overnight lodging, and that translates into jobs and revenue for the community. New Salem attracted 359,950 visitors to the community in 2024 and 374,418 visitors in 2023, according to Belinsky. For others who grew up in the area, it provides a direct connection to the past. Gilmore Walter learned that her great-great-great-great-uncle, Alexander Ferguson, was Lincoln's shoe cobbler in the town. They're not just names on a page anymore. They become real people with a story. So that's a motivating factor for me, she said. From page 2, public safety. Ex-boyfriend shoots at woman, police say. Decatur. Police report that a Decatur woman said her ex-boyfriend pulled a gun during an argument on a city street and fired a shot on her. Sergeant Joseph Sawyer with the Decatur Police Department said the incident happened around 1:45 p.m. Friday in the 1200 block of North Church Street, and the 21-year-old woman escaped injury. The former boyfriend, 31, was being sought on preliminary charges of aggravated, unlawful use of a weapon, reckless discharge of a gun, and aggravated assault with a firearm. All preliminary charges are subject to review by the Office of the State's Attorney. Man reports gunfire near home. Decatur. A Decatur man tells police the peace and quiet of his backyard was interrupted by the sound of gunfire and multiple bullets smacking into a nearby fence and tree. Sergeant Joseph Sawyer with the Decatur Police Department said the 45-year-old resident reported the gunfire happening between 7:50 and 8:13 p.m. Thursday on West Johnson Avenue. The guy said he heard 10 to 15 gunshots, and he believed they were being fired in his direction, Sawyer added. He reported that bullets were ricocheting off a fence and trees. He said he had no idea who was shooting at him or where the gunfire was coming from. Police, concrete thrown at cars. Decatur. Multiple vehicles were hit and damaged by chunks of concrete thrown at them as they drove along East Ferris Parkway in Decatur, police report. Sergeant Joseph Sawyer with the Decatur Police Department said five drivers complained their vehicles were hit during the incident, which dates to around 5:20 a.m. Thursday in the 2800 block. There were no reports of injuries. We have no suspects or witnesses, said Sawyer. Anyone with information can reach police at 217-424-2734 or call Crime Stoppers at 217-423-8477. Crime Stoppers pays cash rewards for information leading to an arrest and conviction. Man jailed faces sixth DUI. Decatur. A Decatur driver charged with his sixth driving under the influence offense has been denied pretrial release on the grounds of protecting public safety. Vernon L. Roberson, 63, appeared in Macon County Circuit Court March 19th and pleaded not guilty to DUI and a further count of driving on a revoked license. His latest charges date to February 9th, and Judge Lindsay Shelton ordered him held in the Macon County Jail. The judge also said she feared he would be a flight risk. A check of Roberson's record shows a DUI conviction in St. Clair County in 2009 and one in Christian County in March 2016. He was also convicted of DUI in Logan County in June 2016 and in Tazewell County in August 2016. His fifth conviction was entered in Macon County on November 2021. From page A5, Nation and World, The Digest, U.S. lifts bounties on three Taliban figures. The U.S. lifted bounties on three senior Taliban figures, including the Interior Minister, who also heads a powerful network blamed for bloody attacks against Afghanistan's former Western-backed government, officials in Kabul said Sunday. The minister, who acknowledged planning a January 2008 attack at the Serena Hotel in Kabul, which killed six people, including U.S. citizen Thor David Hesla, no longer appears on the State Department's Rewards for Justice website. The FBI website on Sunday still featured a wanted poster for him. Interior Ministry spokesman Abdul Mateen Khani said the U.S. revoked the bounties. Other Taliban officials hailed it as the start of normalization. McMahon, Colombia is on the right track. New York. Appearing on CNN's State of the Union Sunday, U.S. Education Secretary Linda McMahon said Columbia University is on the right track toward recovering federal funding after it agreed to implement policy changes demanded by the Trump administration. Columbia's interim president Katrina Armstrong announced Friday that the university would put its Middle East Studies department under new supervision and overhaul rules for protests and student discipline. It also agreed to adopt a new definition of anti-Semitism and staff up its Institute for Israel and Jewish Studies, according to an outline posted on its website. The move came after the Trump administration pulled $400 million in research grants and other funding this month over how the university handled protests against Israel's military campaign in Gaza. Shooting. Tomas Rivas, 20, and two 17-year-olds were arrested on suspicion of murder in Friday night's shooting at a park in Las Cruces, New Mexico, that left three people dead and 15 others hurt, authorities said Sunday. Ukraine. At least seven people were killed after Russia launched drones across Ukraine overnight Sunday, Ukrainian officials said, and emergency services said, ahead of ceasefire talks Monday in Saudi Arabia. China. At a meeting with U.S. Senator Steve Daines, Republican Vermont, and leaders of U.S. businesses, Chinese Premier Li Qiang said on Sunday that Beijing and Washington should choose dialogue instead of confrontation, as the two countries are locked in rising friction over tariffs and efforts to combat the illegal fentanyl trade. Ambassador. Hundreds of supporters welcomed home Ebrahim Rasool at an airport Sunday. The U.S. expelled the South African ambassador, and the Trump administration declared him persona non grata for comments that included him saying the Make America Great Again, MAGA movement, was partly a response to a supremacist instinct. Greenland. Second Lady Usha Vance plans a trip this week to Greenland, the mineral-rich territory of American ally Denmark, that President Donald Trump suggests the United States should take control over. Canada. New Prime Minister Mark Carney and his conservative opponent said U.S. President Donald Trump must respect Canada's sovereignty as they kicked off election campaigns Sunday, amid Trump's trade war and annexation threats. The vote will be April 28th. Schumer won't step aside as Dem leader in Senate. He faces criticism after vote for Trump-backed bill to avoid shutdown. Washington. Senate Democratic leader Chuck Schumer said he will not resign his post, despite pressure from some members of his party, after he voted to move forward with a Republican spending bill that avoided a government shutdown. "Look, I'm not stepping down," Schumer said in an interview with NBC's Meet the Press that aired Sunday. The New York senator said he knew voting for the bill backed by Republican President Donald Trump would spark a lot of controversy. "I did it out of pure conviction as to what a leader should do and what the right thing for America and my party was," he said. "People disagree." Democrats this month were confronted with two painful options: allowing passage of a bill they believe gave Trump vast discretion on spending decisions, or letting funding lapse. After Schumer said he'd vote to advance the measure, 10 Democrats supported breaking the party's filibuster and allowing the bill to pass. Schumer is not up for re-election until 2028. He said the spending bill was certainly bad, but argued that not voting to provide the funding would have been 20 times worse. He called his action a vote of principle. It sparked outrage from some Democrats and progressive activists who protested at his office and called on him to resign his position. They said he'd like to see them face a primary challenge, perhaps from New York Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. The uproar prompted Schumer to postpone his book tour planned amid planned progressive demonstrations. Pope back home from hospital. Francis makes brief public appearance, his first in over a month. Associated Press. Vatican City. A frail Pope Francis returned to the Vatican on Sunday after a 5-week hospitalization for life-threatening double pneumonia, and he made a surprise stop at his favorite basilica on the way home before beginning 2 months of prescribed rest and recovery. The 88-year-old Pope sat in the front passenger seat of his white Fiat 500L, wearing nasal tubes to give him supplemental oxygen, as he entered the Perugino Gate of Vatican City. His return brought relief after fears that his illness could be fatal or lead to another papal resignation. Francis's motorcade from Gemelli Hospital overshot the Vatican initially and took a detour across town to stop at St. Mary Major Basilica, where the Pope's favorite icon of the Madonna is located and where he always goes to pray after a foreign visit. He didn't get out of the car but gave a bouquet of flowers to the Basilica's cardinal to place in front of the Salus Populi Romani icon. The Byzantine-style painting on the wood is revered by Romans and is so important to Francis that he has chosen to be buried near the basilica to be near it. The tour through Rome's historical center came after Francis made his first appearance in 5 weeks to give a thumbs up and brief blessing from a hospital balcony. Hundreds of people gathered on a brilliant spring Sunday morning to say goodbye and catch a glimpse of Francis, who seemed to be gasping for air. "I see this woman with the yellow flowers. Brava," a bloated-looking Francis said in a breathless voice. He gave a weak sign of the cross before being wheeled back inside. Chants of Viva il Papa and Papa Francesco erupted from the crowd, which included patients who were wheeled outside to catch his brief appearance. Doctors say Francis needs 2 months of rest and convalescence at the Vatican, during which he should refrain from meeting with big groups of people or exerting himself. They said he eventually should be able to resume all his normal activities. His return home after the longest hospitalization of his 12-year papacy and the second longest in recent papal history brought tangible relief to the Vatican and Catholic faithful, who anxiously followed 38 days of medical ups and downs, and wondered if Francis would make it. At the Vatican, pilgrims cheered and applauded when Francis's greeting from Gemelli was broadcast live on giant TV screens in St. Peter's Square. No special arrangements were made at the Vatican Hotel, where Francis lives in a two-room suite on the second floor next to the Basilica. He will have supplemented oxygen and 24-hour medical care as needed, though his personal physician, Dr. Luigi Carbone, said he hoped Francis would progressively need less and less assistance breathing as his lungs recover. The Argentine Pope, who has chronic lung disease and had part of one lung removed as a young man, was admitted to Gemelli on February 14th after a bout of bronchitis worsened. Doctors diagnosed a complex bacterial, viral, and fungal respiratory tract infection, then later pneumonia in both lungs. From page 6, the sports page, NCAA tournaments roundup. It was a busy last 4 days with many games being played in the tournament. Results for teams from the Big Ten. In the East Regional first round, Oregon defeated Liberty. And Michigan State defeated Bryant. In the second round, Michigan defeated Texas A&M. Michigan State defeated New Mexico. Illinois won their first game against Xavier, but lost the game on Sunday to Kentucky in the second round, meaning the Illini men are out of the tournament. The Illinois score was Kentucky 84, Illinois 73. Kobe Brea matched a career high with 23 points, and Kentucky, 24-11, defeated Illinois, 22-13, to advance beyond the NCAA tournament's opening weekend for the first time since the Wildcats reached the Elite Eight in 2019. On the women's side of the tournament, Illinois' women's team won a tournament game for the first time in 25 years as they defeated Creighton 66-55 in the first round. Their second round game is actually today, Monday, March 24th. They'll be playing number one seed Texas at 1 o'clock, and the game will be televised on ESPN. Several other women's teams lost in their second round game, including number 9 Indiana losing to number 1 South Carolina 64-53. Number 10 Oregon was defeated by number 2 Duke 59-53. Number 6 Michigan was defeated by number 3 Notre Dame 76-55. And in a slight upset, number 4, Ohio State, was defeated by number 5, Tennessee, 82-67. Other Big Ten women's teams that will be playing today in the second round include Iowa, a 6th seed, playing Oklahoma, a 3rd seed, at 3 p.m., top-ranked Southern Cal, playing Mississippi State at 9 p.m. and number 4 Maryland facing number 5 Alabama at 4 p.m. All of the games today, all 8 of the women's games, can be seen on ESPN. We'll take a short break and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review for Monday, March 24th. Please stay tuned.